things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Oh, you know, I did not do much yesterday.
Okay.
I sat on my couch literally as long as I possibly could.
Yeah.
I watched Titanic.
Oh, I love that.
And then I watched a tattoo show on Netflix. And then we got Chipotle.
Okay.
And then we got home. I sat on my couch again.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched some episodes of Schitt's Creek and I read my book.
Okay.
All on my couch.
I love that. Sounds nice.
The longest that I could possibly make that happen. That's what I was trying to do.
I'm trying to drag this out.
I was not trying to be a productive person.
No, I'm not trying to be productive today.
I kind of don't think that I will also be productive today. This might be the most productive thing that I do.
Guarantee today. This is going to be the only worthwhile thing that I do with my day today.
Are you excited? My eyes are watering and I don't know why.
Oh no. I have a little bit of a sore throat still.
Do you?
Yeah. So sorry about the vocal fry. It's my end today. Yay. But it's Folklore Day.
Oh, are we recording right now?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. What up? Missed you. So glad you're here.
You found it. It's a podcast. It's called A Little Bit Grim. That's Jenny over there.
Hi, that's Taylor.
Hi.
We're so glad you're here.
Yeah, it's Folklore Day. Am I going first or are you going first?
Oh.
Do we need to rock, paper, scissors about it? I think it's you.
I think it's me.
I think it's you.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay.
Take it away.
Okay. Hold on. Because I was not prepared. I have to open up. Hi. Okay. Here are my sources. National Geographic article by Willie Dry, Wonderopolis.com, History.com, Wikipedia, and the complete works of Edgar Allan Poe, published 1946, that was given to me by my sophomore AP English teacher.
Love.
Yeah. She hated me.
Oh,
she
good.
She hated me.
Okay.
Okay. So, hear me out.
Yeah.
Gold.
We love it.
Glittering gold.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful gold. Come back to Pocahontas here. So, men have quite literally moved mountains for it.
Uh-huh.
Stolen for it. Lied for it. Killed for it. The possession of it, regardless of quantity, drives the lust for more. Tall Tales of Guild and Treasure is a siren song for dreamers, adventurers, the hungry, and the brave fools who seek it out. And somewhere in the America, there is a treasure beyond what any man can imagine.
Ooh.
Nestled in the wild jungles, concealed by the canopy above, was a city made entirely out of gold.
Shut up!
Golden roads led to the golden city center that was so blinding you had to shield your eyes. Its golden palaces held chiefs who dressed in flowing robes made of knitted gold thread. They called this missing city El Dorado.
Oh my God. Yay. I'm excited.
The legend surrounding El Dorado wasn't always a missing gold empire, though. At first, El Dorado was just a man.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Experts believe that the El Dorado myth evolved over time. They think that El Dorado was a person, not a place. The ancient Muisca people lived deep in the Andes Mountains, and their civilization sat in what is now Colombia. For them, El Dorado, meaning the Gilded One, represented their tribal chief. Research and ancient texts reveal that the El Dorado of Colombia was never originally considered a city of gold at all. They held a special tradition when a new king rose to power, and in 1638, a explorer wrote his account of the ceremony. So the ceremony took place on the appointment of a new ruler, and before taking office, he spent time secluded in a cave,
okay,
without women, forbidden to eat salt or to go out in the daylight.
Oh, I would hate it.
It sounds terrible. Sounds terrible.
I will salt anything.
It is the opposite of girls' night.
Yeah.
Hate it. The first journey that he had to make was to leave the cave and go to the great lagoon of Guatavita to make offerings and sacrifices to the gods that they worshipped as, like, the water ruler.
Okay.
During the ceremony, which took place in the lagoon, they would make a raft made out of rushes, embellishing and decorating it with the most attractive things they had. They put it on 4 lighted braziers in which they burned the moke, which is an incense that they would use, and resin and many other perfumes. The lagoon was large and deep so that a ship with high sides could sail on it, all loaded with an infinity of men and women dressed in fine plumes, golden plaques, and crowns. As soon as those on the raft began to burn incense, they also lit the braziers on the shore so that the smoke hid the light of day. At this time, they stripped the heir to his skin and anointed him with a sticky earth which they placed gold dust on so that he was completely covered.
Gold dust.
Gold dust.
I like it.
I like it too. It's giving very rock concert.
Oh, absolutely. Burning Man.
Yes, yes. They placed him on the raft, and at his feet, they placed a great heap of gold and emeralds for him to offer to the god. And in the raft with him went 4 principal subject chiefs decked in plumes, crowns, bracelets, pendants, and earrings, all made of gold. They, too, were naked, and each one carried an offering. When the raft reached the center of the lagoon, they raised a banner as a signal for silence. And then the gilded chief would throw out the pile of gold into the middle of the lake, and the chiefs who had accompanied him did the same on their own accounts. After this, they lowered the flag, which had remained up during the whole time of the offering, and as the raft moved towards the shore, the shouting began. Pipes, flutes, and large teams of singers and dancers. With this ceremony, the new ruler was received and was recognized as Lord and King.
Hmm.
This is the ceremony that became the famous El Dorado, which has taken so many lives and fortunes. The Muisca people believed balance and harmony in their environment and within the tribe would be granted from this ceremony. And Spanish explorers heard of this and were led by their greed.
Oh, straight yeah. To these as people. They usually are.
As they usually are. The seductive tale of El Dorado would eventually become generically known as any undiscovered place filled with treasure somewhere in the Americas.
Okay.
Spaniards and other Europeans had found so much gold among the natives along the continent's northern coast that they believed that there had to be a place of great wealth somewhere in the interior. They didn't find El Dorado, but they did find Lake Guatavita and tried to drain it in 1545.
They just tried to drain the whole freaking thing?
Yeah, because they were tossing gold in there. They wanted the gold at the bottom of the lake.
Sure.
So, okay. Yeah, so yes, they tried to drain it.
Got it.
Didn't do a great job.
I would love to know how that's going to work in the 1500s.
Yeah, I don't, just buckets.
With buckets.
An assembly line.
Take a hot minute.
Well, they lowered it enough to find hundreds of pieces of gold along the edge.
So they did find gold in this lake.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because during the ceremonies, the people are tossing gold trinkets right into the lake. So they okay know that it's in there.
Sure.
And they were able to find quite a few around the lake's edges. But the fabulous treasure in the deeper water was beyond their reach. Like, this is a big old lake. You could sail like a whole heckin' regular sized boat.
She Lake Superior.
Lake Superior, yeah.
Got it.
With buckets.
Not a pond.
No. Nay, nay. She a big old lake.
I see.
The concept of El Dorado underwent several transformations, and eventually accounts of the myth were also combined with those of the legendary Lost City. The resulting El Dorado myth enticed European explorers for 2 centuries, and among the earliest stories was one told by Juan Martinez to his cohorts on his deathbed. He was a captain of munitions for the Spanish adventurer Diego de Ordaz, which is a cool name.
That's fun.
Who claimed to have visited the city of Manoa. Martinez had allowed a store of gunpowder to catch fire and was condemned to death. However, his friends, instead of killing him, let him escape downriver in a canoe. So they, like, ushered him out so they wouldn't have to kill him.
I see.
Martinez met with some local people who took him to the city and reported his visit to that place and, like, his adventure that he was saying, like, I think this is the lost city of El Dorado.
Sure.
So the canoe was carried down the stream, and certain of the Guineans met it the same evening, and not having at any time seen any Christian nor man of that color, they carried him into the land to be wondered at, and so from town to town until he came to the great city of Manoa. The seat and residence of Inga the Emperor. The Emperor, after he had beheld him, knew him to be a Christian and caused him to be lodged in the palace, as well as entertained. He brought him all the way, blindfolded, led by the other tribesmen, until he came to the entrance of Benoa itself. About 2 weeks it took to make the passage to Manoa from the river.
That's a long time.
That's a long hike through the jungle.
Sounds perilous.
Yes. He avowed at his death that he entered the city at noon, and then they uncovered his face, and that he traveled all that day till night through the city, and the next day from sunrising to sunsetting, until he finally came to the palace of Inga.
Okay.
Can you imagine strangers in the jungle?
No.
Dragging you through for 2 weeks with a bag over your head?
No. Absolutely not.
I can't.
I would have died of panic.
Oh my god. I would have twisted all of my ankles.
All of my ankles.
And I would have been done.
They yeah, just no. Would have left me I would have been starting to like beg for my life and be like, please just let me die. I hate it.
I hate it in here.
I hate it in here. Please don't ever put a bag over my head. That is like a number one way to make me panic.
Really?
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, I can't imagine I would be too big of a fan of it. I mean, certainly not dragging me through the jungle. But okay, so he got to the palace of Inga and he lived there for 7 months with them. He began to understand the language of the country. The Inga asked him whether he desired to return to his own country or would willingly stay with them. But he, not really wanting to stay, got their permission to leave with them. And so he came back.
Another 2 weeks through the jungle.
Another 2 weeks through the jungle.
The other way.
Blindfolded, yes. Uphill both ways. And
right. So they just blindfolded him because they didn't want him to know where he was going, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. But while he was there, he listened to all of their stories.
Okay.
And, like, living with them of their tales talking about, quote, El Dorado.
Sure.
In their gold treasures that they have. But because he was blindfolded and it was 2 weeks away, he had no idea where the hell they were going.
There's no way you can even backtrack that.
Exactly. And it's like these people were so hidden that anybody, like when he got back, they didn't even know like what people
he was talking about.
Yes, correct.
They were like, you did too many mushrooms in the jungle and you made all of this up.
Don't eat the berries. Don't eat. Oh my gosh. Ian and I, sorry, so sidetracked.
It's all good.
We're talking this morning about people who die in the national parks.
Oh yeah.
And there was a list.
Okay.
Of like the deadliest where the most people die. And what the deadliest is the Cascades National Park in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And one of the leading causes of death are berries. And I'm like, rule number one, don't eat shit that you find. I'm like, really?
Listen, that would be the way I'd go. I know that I'm about to eat something I shouldn't eat. 100%. That's
we're just,
me.
We're just doing it anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would be like, it's just blackberry.
But look how it smells so good.
It smells good.
And
looks
so
good.
Brightly colored. It's like it wants me to eat it.
And then I'd be toast.
Yep. Anyway, during the 16th and 17th centuries, Europeans, still fascinated by the New World, believed that the hidden city of immense wealth did in fact exist.
Okay.
And so there were tons of expeditions. Like, people became obsessed with the idea of El Dorado. And it's like every time there was a failed expedition, the guys come back and they're like, we were this close. We were this close.
God.
And it just like generated all of
frenzy.
This. Yes. So much hype for El Dorado. What made matters worse is that all of these people, explorers, would go feel that they were within like 5-10 miles of El Dorado. So they would put it on the map. There are maps
with El Dorado.
With El Dorado on it.
What?
And the maps are not discounted until, what, hold on, let me keep reading.
Okay. Tell me the story in which the story goes.
Yes. So, the illustration of El Dorado's location on maps only made matters worse, as it made people think that the city of El Dorado's existence had actually been confirmed and found. Wow. The mythical city of El Dorado on Lake Paramé was marked on numerous maps until the location's existence were disproved by explorers. So, like, people would go and go to this location of the map.
And they'd be like, bitch, there is nothing here.
El Dorado is not here. Okay, so remember the Roanoke episode?
Yeah.
That we just did. Do you remember the Colonial Kickstarter program Sir Walter Riley?
Yeah.
Started to fund his pipe dream. He had other dreams, too, turns out. He made two trips to Guyana in search for El Dorado.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. During his second trip in 1617, he set his son, Watt Riley, with an expedition up the Orinoco River. But Sir Walter Riley, then an old-ass dude, stayed behind at a base camp on the island of Trinidad. The expedition was a fucking disaster. Watt died.
Oh, God.
Killed in a battle with the Spanish. Eric Klingelhofer, an archaeologist at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, is trying to find the site of Riley's base camp in Trinidad. He said that Walter Riley was furious at the survivor of his son's expedition and blamed him for letting his son get killed and gave him such a verbal tongue lashing that the survivor went into his cabin on the ship and killed himself.
Holy fuck.
Can you imagine? Like, I don't ever want to hear men say that women are so emotional again.
Like, bro.
Like, you can't get yelled at?
Have you ever worked retail?
Obviously not. Obviously, you have never worked at a Black Friday event.
Right. Jesus.
Anyway. So, Riley, pissed off, went back to England to try to set up yet another expedition for El Dorado, where King James ordered him to be beheaded for a myriad of things.
Okay, so, hold on. Riley, after losing his son, goes back and is like, we're doing it again.
Yes.
But King James was like, sir, your head's gotta go.
Actually, we're gonna take your head and we're gonna take it off of the body.
So you can stop this nonsense.
Yes.
I see.
For quite a litany of bullshit, but mostly for cowardice and disobeying orders to avoid confrontation with the Spanish. So, like, King James would be like, okay, you have to take your boat from here to here. And he would, like, take a roundabout so he didn't run into the Spanish. And when he got back, King James was like, what the fuck?
You did not follow my orders.
I told you directly to scuffle with the Spanish.
And he was like, no, thanks.
I don't want to.
I am non-confrontational.
I ain't in a scuffling mood today.
That has never been me.
It's giving very Weenie Hut Jr. vibes. After King James had him beheaded, the funded expeditions tapered off.
Sure.
And now we are left with this legend of this city that may or may not exist. People say they saw it. People say they were close to it, that the tribes, like, that were native to the area knew about it.
Right.
But it's never been found. And there is a lot of study and scholars who say, like, the entire thing is bullshit.
Right. Okay.
But every expedition, and on the, like, this would be a 14-hour episode if I went and talked about every single expedition that happened. Taylor, there were hundreds.
Oh, my God.
And hundreds of thousands of men died looking for this city.
Jesus.
And it's like the more people that died, the more the story, like, grew in fervor. But really, it's just because of this one ceremony that they have for the chief where they threw their gold into a lake. That's why.
That's the only nugget of truth.
That's the only nugget of truth.
That we have here.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane to me.
I know.
But I get it. Like, the more people that give their lives and, like, die.
Sorry.
Whoops. The more people that, like, give their lives for it and die for it, that, like, gives the story a little bit more weight.
Yeah.
And people have to be like, well, they had to have known something.
Why are
in order to actually want to die for it.
Yes. like, oh, you think these men are just, like, throwing their lives away on, like, on nothing? No, there's something.
There's got to be something.
There's got to be something out there.
Hmm.
So it has turned, there's a movie about it.
Oh, yeah, we love the movie.
And if you yourself ever feel so inclined to go search for El Dorado, Edgar Allan Poe can give you some directions.
I can't wait.
He says, "Gaily bedight, a gallant knight, in sunshine and in shadow, had journeyed long, singing a song in search of El Dorado. But he grew old, this knight so bold, and over his heart a shadow fell as he found no spot of ground that looked like El Dorado. And as his strength failed him at length, he met a pilgrim shadow. 'Shadow,' said he, 'where can it be, this land of El Dorado?' 'Over the mountains of the moon and down the valley of the shadow, ride, boldly ride,' the shade replied, 'if you seek for El Dorado.'"
Ooh, that was good.
Thank you.
I liked it.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thanks. It's, I always get excited. It's like Atlantis.
Yeah.
When it's like, there's like evidence and like history. But then I got halfway through and I'm like, this is baloney.
This is baloney.
El Dorado does not exist. And I'm so sad.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. But now we all know. Now we can all be sad together.
I feel like that's how I'm going to be about Atlantis when I actually do it.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like, how much I love a fact.
Yeah. There are very few facts.
No facts.
No facts to correlate the wild assumptions that we make.
Right. Which is why we're on a folklore day.
Exactly. Welcome to the theme.
All right. Are you ready for my tale?
Yes.
Today.
Is it a whale of a tale?
A whale of a tale. All right. So my sources are darkhistory.com.
I like that.
I know. An article on ancientorigins.net by Joanna Gillen, and a poem at the end.
What?
Look, poem day.
On a little poetry kick. I know.
All right. Emily Segui was a 32-year-old school teacher in 1845. Her pupils loved her as she was smart and kind. She seemed to love the children right back and truly believed that she belonged in the classroom. Emily was teaching her class of 17 girls one day while she was writing on the blackboard, with her back facing the students, when the girls noticed something odd was happening.
Uh-oh.
Suddenly, Emily wasn't alone by the blackboard. There was an entity standing next to her that looked exactly like her. It stood beside her and imitated her movements while Emily drew on the chalkboard. All the children in the room could clearly see the entity next to her, but Emily herself seemed to not be able to see what they saw.
What?
It's a good thing she couldn't, because when you see your own doppelganger, it's supposed to be extremely bad news.
Doppelganger! I fucking love this!
Okay. The children went home and told their parents of the peculiar happenings in the classroom that day. Unfortunately, the parents demanded that Emily be removed from her position, so she was let go. The school gave her a letter of recommendation and sent her on her way, and it went on like this for years. For the next 16 years, what? Emily would move from school to school after being forced to leave after her students would catch a glimpse of her shadow self. By the end of the 16 years, Emily would have worked at 19 different schools.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Once, Emily was helping one of her students get dressed up for a formal event. As the student stood patiently while Emily zipped her dress, the doppelganger appeared. The student glanced behind her and saw that two Emilies were helping her in her dress. The incident was terrifying to the girl, and she immediately told everyone that she knew.
Yeah. As would I.
Same. One of the most well-known and talked-about incidents was a spring day when her large class of 42 girls were all working on their sewing. Emily was in the garden of the school. What?
I'm sorry. Just imagining a life where be like, oh, yes, well, after math, I have to go to sewing class.
Right. What a time.
Yeah.
Emily was in the garden of the school, and the girls could see her from the window. There was another supervisor in the room keeping an eye on the girls. When the supervisor stepped out for a moment, Emily came in and sat in her place. The girls didn't think anything of it at first, but then one of the girls looked out the window and saw that Emily was still out in the garden. The girls were extremely shaken up, but some were brave enough to go up to Emily sitting at the desk. She didn't look up or engage with them at all. Some of the girls were able to touch her, but their hands went right through her, and they described the sensation as touching cobwebs.
Ew.
Afterward.
Oh my god, it gave me chills, Taylor.
I know.
Gross.
Afterward, Emily said that she felt the desire to go in and check on the children, but she knew that because they were being supervised, she decided to stay out in the garden.
Okay.
According to multiple people who had seen the duplicate in action, when this would happen, the flesh and blood Emily would suddenly look extremely lethargic and color would drain from her face, making her look really ill. It was as if the duplicate was a part of her spirit, and when they were separated, it would have a physical effect on Emily. Her story was first told by Robert Dale Owen in 1860 in his book called Footfalls on the Boundary of Another World. He himself heard the story from Julie von Guldenstubel, daughter of Baron von Guldenstubel.
Google Strudel. Emily von Guggenstrugen.
Who attended the elite boarding school in the year 1845 in present-day Latvia. Is that right?
Latvia?
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the school in which Emily Sigge was employed that year.
Okay.
So doppelganger stories like Emily's are rare. The definition of doppelganger has changed throughout the course of time. A true doppelganger in the original definition is very similar to Emily's. It's a fracture of the spirit that allows for two to be in one place, or to be in two places at one time and both be seen. In more modern times, a doppelganger is somebody who just bears a really striking resemblance to you. So that's when people say, you know, I saw your doppelganger.
Yeah.
So there's just two kinds of definitions there. Doppelganger is from the German folklore and means double goer.
Yeah.
According to Britannica, it is a wraith or apparition of a living person as distinguished from a ghost. The concept of the existence of a spirit double, an exact but usually invisible replica of every man, bird, or beast, is an ancient and widespread belief. To meet one's double is a sign that one's death is imminent. The doppelganger became a popular symbol of horror literature, and the theme took on a considerable complexity.
It's like evil twin origin story.
Yep. So the idea of doppelgangers can be traced back thousands of years through ancient times. It was present in many cultures of the past, holding a prominent place in ancient legends, stories, artworks, and in books by various authors. Sometimes the idea of a doppelganger is related to the idea of having the evil twin and suggests that the second spirit may try to communicate with the person they shadow. However, they may try to give the person false information or misleading information that is malicious. So they're trying to harm the person that they are imitating. People are always advised not to communicate with their own doppelganger to avoid this bad advice. One of the most famous depictions of doppelgangers comes from an 1851 sketch and 1864 watercolor called How They Met Themselves by Dante Gabriel Rossetti. According to interpretation, two medieval lovers are walking through the woods at twilight when they encounter their doubles who glow supernaturally. The man draws his sword in astonishment while his lover appears to collapse in a deathly swoon. In ancient Egyptian mythology, a ka was a tangible spirit double, having the same memories and feelings as the person to whom the counterpart belongs. In one Egyptian myth titled The Greek Princess, an Egyptian view of the Trojan War, a ka of Helen was used to mislead Paris of Troy, helping to stop the war. Norse folklore describes entities known as Vardgar. I don't know. Please don't come for me about the pronunciation. ghostly beings that preceded their living counterparts, taking their places at various activities and performing their actions in advance. The spirit with the subject's footsteps, voice, scent, or appearance and overall demeanor precedes them in a location or activity, resulting in witnesses believing they've seen or heard the actual person before the person arrives. This bears a subtle resemblance from a doppelganger with a less sinister connotation. People from the Orkney Islands in Scotland feared small fairy-like creatures called trows.
Aww.
According to legend, trows would give birth to children who were apt to be sickly.
Oh.
Pregnant women were carefully guarded from the trows, who would often steal healthy human beings and replace them with their own children, known as changelings, who would transform into exact replicas of the stolen children.
Ew.
Don't like it.
Icky.
Don't like that one. There are a few other real-life reports of people having either seen their own doppelganger or others seeing a friend or family member in double. One of the most well-known is a story about Abraham Lincoln. The story told by Noah Brooks in his book Washington in Lincoln's Time was published in 1895. According to his account, soon after Lincoln was elected in 1860, he arrived home one day and looked into the bureau mirror and saw himself reflected in double. Lincoln said, "Nearly at full length, but my face had two separate and distinct images." Lincoln noticed that although the images were nearly identical, one was a little paler, say 5 shades, than the other. His wife was said to be very worried and told Lincoln that she believed that the paleness of the half of the dual image was a bad omen, which meant that Lincoln would serve only his first full term and he would not finish his second.
Well.
Yeah. There's a lot about Lincoln, like, being able to, like, foresee
his own death. He's like Rasputin.
Yeah.
He's warlocky.
Yeah, he was warlocky.
Yeah.
Writer, poet, and statesman Johann Wolfgang von Goethe claimed that the encounter, to encounter a doppelganger during his life from 1749 to 1832. He alleged he was headed by horse to Dürsenheim after ending a relationship with a girl called Frederica. He came across the exact double of himself, also on a horse, heading in the opposite direction. The only difference was that the doppelganger had on a gold-trimmed gray suit. Von Goethe was on the same road 8 years later, heading in the same direction as his doppelganger had been, and he suddenly realized he was wearing the exact same gold-trimmed gray coat that he had seen his ghostly double in.
Ew.
Before.
Yikes.
Isn't that so creepy?
Yes.
What? The writer claimed to see the doppelganger of his friend, too, dressed in Von Goethe's own robe. On returning home, he found his friend wearing the same robe he had seen on the man's wraith-like double.
Ew.
The servants of Catherine the Great reported seeing her in the throne room one night when she was actually in her bed. She ordered them to shoot her evil spirit double, and strangely, she perished shortly after her double was shot at.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So, like, she said, you need to shoot the double, and they did.
And then she died.
And then she died.
Ah!
Isn't that wild?
That's gross. I don't like that.
Don't like it. Guy de Maupassant?
Sure.
Was a French writer who died in 1893. He was well known for his mastery of short stories. One of his short stories, La Orla, was indeed ghostwritten as, sources cite, it was dictated to him by his doppelganger.
Ooh.
Allegedly, his health began to worsen shortly after he had written the story, which recounted a tale of a man who went mad due to a sinister ghost taking him over.
Oh my god. It's giving very poltergeist.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, is it a ghost? Is it, what is it?
What kind of entity is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, super weird. While many today still believe in the existence of a double self, some scientists believe that the phenomenon occurs based on injuries or stimulation to certain parts of the brain, which cause errors in spatial reasoning.
Oh, they would think that.
Right. Others believe it is a result of a vision, hallucination, or that we live in a parallel universe in which everything in this world is replicated in another dimension. Whether the real truth behind doppelgangers... belief in the spirit double has instilled both fear and wonder in people for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So that is my story on the doppelganger, and now I have a poem for you.
Yes. Hi, you can't be rubbing your head on stuff.
Your noggin.
You're gonna cause feedback on the microphones.
Poor sweet bub. Okay. James A. London wrote this poem called Doppelganger in 1973, and it is a palindrome, so line by line, it can be read both forwards and backwards.
Ew!
Which is a very cool way to write a poem about a doppelganger.
It's a cool literary tool.
I love it.
Yes.
Here for it. Entering the lonely house with my wife, I saw him for the first time, peering furtively... What? Huh?
Are you
furtively? Is that right?
don't know. It's Taylor, it's your poem.
Well, I hadn't had to read it out loud before until right now. Okay. Furtively.
Furtively.
From behind a bush. Blackness that moved, a shape amid shadows, a momentary glimpse of gleaming eyes, revealed in the ragged moon. A closer look, he seemed to turn, might have put him into flight forever. I dared not, for reasons that I failed to understand, though I knew I should act at once. I puzzled over it, hiding alone, watching the woman as she neared the gate. He came, I saw him crouching, night after night, night after night. He came, and I saw him crouching, watching the woman as she neared the gate. I puzzled over it, hiding alone, though I knew I should act at once. For reasons that I failed to understand, I dared not put him into flight forever. A closer look, he seemed to turn, might have revealed in the ragged moon a momentary glimpse of gleaming eyes, a shape amid the shadows, blackness that moved. Peering furtively from behind the bush, I saw him for the first time entering the lonely house with my wife. And that is the poem by J.A. Linden.
Gross.
And that's Doppelgangers.
Ew.
It's very Glitch in the Matrix-y.
Yes.
Which Jenny and I experienced this weekend.
Oh my god. Well, did I just get so drunk we shift into a new timeline?
Which I feel like is a different Glitch in the Matrix.
Of a different flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things were weird.
Things were so weird.
On Saturday morning, Jenny and I coming home from this concert. It was like the ambulances looked different. There was a new DQ just down the street that we were both like, what the fuck, when did that get here? New construction
came out of nowhere. The sky was weird. It was very jolting.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yeah. We're in a different timeline.
Different timeline. Then. I still haven't left my house since yet. Well, I went to go get Chipotle yesterday. I guess that counts, but.
There you go.
Yeah.
I went to a Comets game.
Yeah. Was there anything weird at the Comets game?
I mean, just shitty refs.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah. It was very bizarre. We had a great time at the Spill concert, though.
Yeah. It was a blast.
So much fun. Great time.
Oh, Spill Canvas, we love you.
So much.
Why don't you come to Fort Wayne?
I don't know. I ran into Nick, in case anybody was wondering. I said I would update you. I did run into Nick outside of the venue.
She did, in fact.
I did.
Do that.
By my lonesome.
All by herself.
Because that's what I just wander. I need to quit wandering off.
I mean, it works out for you.
It works out for me, but I feel bad for you.
It's fine.
Okay.
I got the text and I was just like, "What? Whatever. I don't know. At least I have a good spot, like by the stage, I guess.
That's true. Yes.
I was like, I'm not leaving my spot.
No, I was outside. I don't even know what I was doing. Just meandering.
Making friends.
I made friends with the literally entire staff.
Everyone. Literally everyone. I love that.
Saw a girl I went to Europe with when I was like 14. Yeah, crazy. Weird times. It was weird times. But we're here now and so happy. And that was our bright and shiny last week. What's yours?
My bright and shiny this week is that it is Thanksgiving this week. So by the time this comes out, yesterday will have been Thanksgiving.
Oh, happy Friday noir.
Yeah. So hopefully my Thanksgiving went really well.
It will.
But that is my bright and shiny this week, is that we are hosting Thanksgiving at my house.
Is this your first time hosting?
Yes.
Ooh, it's so fun.
Yeah. So it's going to be good. I went and got all my groceries and all that kind of good stuff last week. And hopefully I make all the things well. Hopefully nothing gets burnt or anything happens.
It will not. That's, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Just fine.
What's your bright and shiny?
My bright and shiny is also going to be Thanksgiving's. But this year, Ian and I are going to see my sister.
Yay!
See my little, she's my big sister.
Yeah.
But to go see my sister in Minnesota. It'll be the first Thanksgiving that Kara and I have had together. Oh my gosh, I can't, like, since young baby child days.
Aw, cute.
I know.
When are you leaving?
We leave on, so wish me luck, we leave on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And we land, the flight was originally supposed to land at like 8:30.
Okay.
And then they just postponed the flight. And so now we don't land until like 2.
Bummer.
Super bummer. But we'll be back Saturday.
Okay.
So it's just like a quick little
jaunt.
Yeah.
fun.
I'm super excited. I'm flying on an airline I've never heard of before.
What is that?
On the flight back, Sun County Airline. I know, I've never heard of it.
That's weird. Yeah. Is it operated by like American or operated by Delta?
Girl, I don't think, I think it's just, it's like Spirit.
Weird.
Yeah.
All right. Are you flying out of Fort Wayne?
We're flying out of Midland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but they have a direct flight. It's only like an hour and a half.
That's not bad.
And flights were super cheap. So.
Love that.
Yeah. I love it too.
Excellent.
Yeah. I've never flown on. Have you flown on Thanksgiving?
Mm-mm.
Before? I haven't either. We flew on Christmas Eve last year.
Okay.
And it wasn't bad.
The only thing I've done is flown like the day after New Year's. So flown on like January 2nd, which is a pretty busy day.
Is it?
Yeah. And that was one where Ryan and I had to like home alone book it through Atlanta.
Oh.
To make our connection. Because our first flight got delayed. And it was just so happened that the rest of my family was going to be on our connecting flight.
Ooh.
So they were like, they're literally on their way. They're running. And so
they hold the flight.
They held the flight for
amazing.
Us.
Amazing.
We were the last on the flight and everybody like clapped for us when we got on. And I was like out of breath.
We're a little winded.
Oh my gosh. It was stressful. I was like texting Laura. I was like, I'm on my way.
Don't let them leave.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so fingers crossed I don't have to deal with that. We have a direct flight, so.
Yeah, love a direct flight. Yeah, that makes
I really
it
don't
so nice.
Do layovers.
I think I have a direct flight to Jamaica.
I don't.
I think I do, because I'm flying out of Chicago. I'm going,
so am I.
I'm going out of O'Hare, though.
Oh, yeah, we're flying out of Midland.
Yeah.
Midland to Fort Lauderdale. We have, like, the weirdest hour layover in Fort Lauderdale.
Weird.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which is whatever. It'll be fine. I'm flying Southwest, so let's hope they pull their shit together.
Probably. Yeah. They have. I haven't heard any, like, too big stories about Southwest lately.
Me either. But, so, wish me luck. 30 days.
30 days from today.
From today. But, like, when this episode comes out, that will be, like, 21 days.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
The countdown is real.
Yeah. I have it on, like, my homepage. Like, my wedding countdown. Yeah. And I feel like I need to delete it because it's really giving me stress ulcers.
Bringing you anxiety vibes.
Yes, it is bringing me anxiety vibes.
Understandable.
So if anybody has ever flown with a wedding dress, please email us.
Yeah, let us know how that goes.
Let us know how it goes. You can leave us a review if you want, if you like what you hear. Follow us on the social media. Send us your spooky story. Do you have a doppelganger? Have you met them?
Yeah, we would love to
know. I'm a doppelganger.
And you know, don't forget to be kind to yourself
and to others.
Goodbye.